This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
China reacts with anger as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi vows U.S. solidarity with Taiwan.
Beginning Thursday, we're going to see large-scale, live-fire military exercises effectively encircling the island of Taiwan. I think it's going to be really important to watch what happens over the next few days.
Plus, India rushes to 5G, and voters in Kansas choose to protect abortion rights in the state's constitution. It's Wednesday, August 3rd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi met with Taiwan's president today in what she called a show of American solidarity for the island, defying repeated warnings from Beijing and fueling U.S.-China tensions. In an address, Pelosi described the world as divided between democracy and autocracy and vowed to stand by Taiwan.
America's determination to preserve democracy here in Taiwan and around the world remains ironclad. And we're grateful to the partnership of the people of Taiwan in this mission.
We'll have more on Pelosi's visit and Beijing's response to what it regards as a challenge to its sovereignty later in the show. Voters in the U.S. state of Kansas have soundly rejected a proposed state constitutional amendment that would have ended protections for abortion in the first statewide referendum on the issue since the Supreme Court eliminated abortion rights at the federal level. Journal reporter Laura Cusisto says the results show that abortion has the capacity to turn out voters in large numbers, even in conservative-leaning states.
It was something of a wake-up call for Republicans who had argued that abortion was not an issue on voters' minds. It will also have practical consequences, protecting access to abortion in Kansas, one of a relatively small number of states in the South and the Midwest where abortion will remain legal.
In another closely watched election yesterday, Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt won the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate, foiling a comeback from scandal-plagued former Governor Eric Greitens. We've got a lot more coverage of Tuesday's primary elections in five U.S. states at wsj.com/politics. Leaders of a U.S. Senate committee are set to propose legislation assigning oversight of the two largest cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and Ether, to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The bipartisan bill could be introduced today and would empower the agency to regulate spot markets for digital commodities, a newly created asset class. The bill is part of an intensifying battle among federal agencies and congressional committees over who will regulate crypto. 13 years after Bitcoin's creation, cryptocurrencies remain largely unregulated by the federal government, leaving investors without key protections from fraud and market manipulation. Airbnb swung to a profit in the second quarter on the back of strong revenue as people continued to book suburban rentals despite hosts raising prices. The San Francisco company posted $2.1 billion in revenue in the 3 months through June, up 58% from the same period last year. However, Airbnb issued a weaker-than-expected outlook that overshadowed otherwise strong results. And chipmaker AMD has reported a sharp increase in its second quarter sales, driven by strength in its data center business, where rival Intel has been stumbling. But AMD did issue a muted outlook for the current quarter, falling short of Wall Street projections. This week, the Indian government wrapped up an auction of its 5G telecom spectrum. 5G is far faster than the present networks and seen as key to a new era of digitally connected industries, as India plans to roll out faster service to major cities by the fall and catch up to countries like China and South Korea. We should note India is the second largest telecommunications market in the world, with more than 1 billion subscribers as of April. Journal Heard on the Street columnist Megha Mandavia has been following this 5G sale and joins us now with a look at what we should know about it. Hey, Megha.
Hi, Lou. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
It's our pleasure. So what is notable about this auction and the firm behind the winning bid?
Yeah, this 5G spectrum bidding went way better than expected. 70% of the spectrum on sale was sold. So that was way more than market analysts were expecting. India's biggest telecom company, Reliance Jio, got the lion's share of that bidding auction. So yes, it was much better than expected, which has kind of made market analysts a bit nervous because India may not be actually ready to adopt 5G services. India is a very price-sensitive market, may not be ready to pay a premium pricing for 5G. And most of the use cases for which Indians use internet, like internet browsing or streaming videos or making short videos, 4G suffices. And India offers very, very cheap 4G services. So there is a bit of concern among the analysts that telecom companies may have spent more than they should have in this 5G spectrum sale.
So what then do these companies stand to gain from this? Why were the bids in this auction as high as they were?
I think it's a race and everyone wants to be ahead, right? And everyone wants a first mover advantage. And companies like Reliance, which have good cash on hand, may be able to be a little more aggressive than other players in the market. And therefore, I guess they think that if they move in fast, they may be able to capture the premium users who are willing to pay a little more for their 5G services.
Yeah, you talk about moving in fast. Reliance Jio says it's going to roll out what it claims will be the world's most advanced platform in the shortest period of time. I mean, what effect could a new generation of telecom infrastructure have on India and its economy?
Right. So yes, they do want rapid rollout. But one of the biggest challenges that India right now has only a 10% of its smartphones are in the market right now are 5G enabled. So that will have to change before there's a rapid rollout. But if we see rapid adoption of 5G, then we will see use cases like remote surgery, I guess faster online education, or any of these industries like manufacturing or smart cars are set to benefit from that. So I guess India will have to be patient to see a 5G rollout as well as adoption of these services in India.
That was Wall Street Journal Heard on the Street columnist Megha Mandavia joining us from Bangalore, India. Megha, thanks so much.
Thank you, Luke.
Coming up, we'll get the latest on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan and China's anger over the trip. That story after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the highest-ranking U.S. official in a quarter century to visit Taiwan, has said the U.S. will not abandon the self-ruled island, which Beijing claims as part of its territory. China has responded angrily to the visit, announcing military drills around Taiwan and imposing fresh import bans on items from the country. Wall Street Journal senior China correspondent Brian Spiegel joins us now from Beijing to discuss Pelosi's trip and where it leaves relations between China, the U.S., and Taiwan. Brian, thank you for being with us.
Thanks very much for having me.
Brian, first off, did Speaker Pelosi make any meaningful or surprising moves on this trip?
No, I think House Speaker Pelosi's statements throughout the trip are very consistent with what her messaging has been for many years now. I think really the news here is the fact that this trip happened at all. It's the most senior U.S. official to visit Taiwan in 25 years. And it comes at a particularly sensitive time in U.S.-China relations, and kind of the domestic political situation in China is just so sensitive. So it really is a very provocative time for her to be coming. And I think that's why we've seen such blowback. In terms of what she actually said today, she met with Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen, and she pledged ironclad support for Taiwan's democracy. Really an unequivocal term saying that we are with you, we're here to help you to preserve Taiwan as kind of a beacon of democracy in the face of authoritarian China.
What should we make of the Chinese government's response to Pelosi's visit? You mentioned just a second ago this coming at a sensitive time in the domestic Chinese political situation. Could that have something to do with the response that we saw?
Yeah, the experts that I'm speaking with here in China think that's a significant part of why we're seeing such a strong response. So within the next couple of months, we're going to see a once-in-five-year Communist Party Congress, where President Xi Jinping of China is attempting an unusual political maneuver where he will keep power for a third term. That is not an uncontested move. It is controversial in some corners here, and he needs to look strong in order to pull this off. He is expected to pull this off, but he cannot afford to look weak on an issue as important as Taiwan. It's just important to step back and understand that Taiwan is such an important issue to China. It really goes to the fundamental legitimacy of the Communist Party and the promise that they've made to their people over the course of many decades now to reunify Taiwan with mainland China.
Do you think that we have seen the extent of China's reaction to this visit?
No, I think the reaction is simply getting underway at this point, and I think it's going to be really important to watch how things unfold over the next few days. So beginning Thursday and running through Sunday, we're going to see large-scale, live-fire military exercises around Taiwan, effectively encircling the island of Taiwan. So I think the hope among international relations scholars watching this is that cool heads will prevail. There will not be some sort of incident. But the risk is when you are in a live fire sort of scenario, there's a lot of U.S. military assets in the area. Could an accident happen? Could a miscalculation happen? That could lead us on an escalatory spiral. So I don't think we've seen the extent of things. I think it's going to be really important to watch what happens over the next few days.
And Brian, finally, has this visit changed the broader geopolitical situation in the Asia-Pacific region?
I think this visit has accelerated something that's been happening for quite some time, where we've seen the U.S. throwing increasing support behind Taiwan in more and more public ways, which is really unsettling to China. From China's perspective, the U.S. and Taiwan do not have any sort of military alliance. Indeed, the U.S. and Beijing have diplomatic relations, and the United States does not recognize Taiwan as a sovereign country. So when you see high-profile figures like Speaker Pelosi in Taiwan, that feeds into Beijing's greatest fears that the U.S. is throwing all of its geopolitical weight behind Taiwan and reneging on its commitments to its diplomatic relations with China. So the only thing I would add to all of this is that I think there is a view among international relations scholars here that this is not an uncontrollable situation. Cool heads can prevail here, and the U.S. and China have a long history now of dealing with each other. So the question is, do the leaderships in both of these countries have the wisdom, have the temperament to kind of work our way out of this? It'll be really interesting to watch how do the leaders of both of these countries manage the Taiwan issue going forward.
That was Wall Street Journal senior China correspondent Brian Spiegel in Beijing. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And finally, chicken. In the U.S., it is everywhere right now, as big brands such as Panera Bread and Popeyes add new chicken sandwiches to their menus, while the likes of Burger King, KFC, and Wendy's spend millions of dollars on national TV ads spotlighting their own chicken offerings. WSJ Restaurants reporter Heather Haddon says that amid high inflation, chicken is having a moment for a reason.
I think for restaurants, when it comes to chicken, it tends to be a cheaper meat than beef. Beef prices and chicken have both risen, but beef tends to be more expensive in general than chicken. And so you can potentially get a little bit more profit when it comes to these chicken offerings. For customers, I think it's become a comfort food. You know, it's a fried piece of poultry, which is tasty and kind of indulgent in a lot of cases. And people are looking for comforting items right now that they feel like are a good value. And some of these chicken sandwiches do offer that.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.